Now joining us on the KYMN Morning Show is Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Matt Hillman. Good morning, Matt.
Jeff, good morning. You know, it's that time of year in Minnesota where we're going to have, I think I heard Bob Matheson say 80-some degrees today, and then, you know, back to...
And then 40 over the weekend.
Exactly, yeah. So welcome to Minnesota. If you don't like the weather, wait 15 minutes.
You know, let's talk about this for just a moment. Last week was homecoming.
Yes.
You had great weather for the football game. It looked like just a perfect week, capped off with a big win at homecoming. Hall of Fame was... we had six new members enshrined there. Boy, last week was a good week at Northfield High School.
You know, Jeff, I think that as we all are emerging from this very interesting and disruptive time in our history and certainly our lifetimes, having some of the regular things back to regular is something I think everyone is really savoring. So you're absolutely right. You know, the homecoming week, by all accounts, last week at Northfield High School was really joyous, a lot of fun, a lot of the typical kinds of activities that you would associate with homecoming. Some, you know, of course, the football game is really kind of the capstone event, but other events that are happening, student dress-up days where they can, you know, with various themes and just that kind of fun to let students blow off a little steam after the first month or so of school. By all accounts, a lot of reader pride throughout the district last week. Something that we implemented that we're continuing to do, we started it in COVID, was a Raider Spirit Bus, where high school students go to each of the elementaries and talk to them about homecoming, and they do some cheers and get the kids excited, building that Raider pride as kids are younger. And so just a lot of great things last week. Like you said, the football game on Friday night, great win for Coach Yule and the Raider football team over Rochester Century, a packed house. And you could just feel people just really happy to be there. So it was a great week. You know, thank, you know, Shane Beyer, high school principal, Bubba Sullivan, the activities director, Noah Gagno, and Scott Stanina are the student council advisors at the high school who do a lot of the planning for homecoming, student dance on Saturday night. So what we'll call a regular homecoming, just even more joyous than normal.
All right. And that kind of continued a bit yesterday. You had a retired teacher's luncheon that is always, or it was a luncheon or breakfast?
It's a luncheon, yes.
Luncheon, yeah. And to get to see some of the longtime employees at Northfield High School come back, it's there's a lot of wisdom in that room.
There is, and we had nearly 70 people at this event yesterday, Jeff. And ranging from all sorts of service to the Northfield School District. There are teachers, former administrators, former child nutrition personnel, former custodians. And it really is just a celebratory event to bring those folks together who, you know, really gave their life to an altruistic career. It's just so fun to watch them connect with people. Fun for people to see former colleagues enjoy each other's company. President of the Northfield Education Association, Kevin Dahl, gave a humorous speech that really had people on the floor laughing in a very good way. And you know, Kevin is always just so entertaining and also very appreciative, you know, of the work that teachers and other staff have done. So it was just a great opportunity for us to be able to reconnect with. I'm always. You know, I like to do the math, Jeff, and I think in a room like that of around 70 retired educators, and I think of all of the lives who they have impacted and all of the impact that they know about, but even more so, all of that positive impact that maybe no one ever told them or that they don't know about. So my message to our community today is, if you had a teacher or another educator who is really important in your life, make sure you take a moment and just send them a note saying, hey, you know, you made a difference for me and here's why. Those things are the reasons that people went into public education. They want to make a difference for their community. They want to make a difference for our democracy. And so often, many people go without hearing how they made that impact. So for those listening, if you had a special teacher, you know, retired or current, special educator that you knew, administrative assistant, a principal, you know, someone who made a difference for you or for your children, please reach out to them and just say, hey, thanks for making a difference. We are facing a time where less people are choosing public education as a career, and we need to make sure that those folks who are in the game know that they're valued and appreciated, and so we can encourage the next generation of people to go into public education.
Superintendent Hillman is with us. Let's move on into, I want to spend a little time talking about the Capital Projects Levy. 4 weeks from today will be Election Day, November the 8th, and you have a couple of items that will be on the ballot and both concern capital projects and the levy. Let's talk about, first of all, last night, moving back to last night, the council, school board studying that. What went on? Was there discussion on that last night?
Yeah, so I really just gave a report of the informational campaign that we're working on, Jeff, and our goal is for people in the community to know about the capital projects levy and to understand why we need it and how it impacts them. So capital projects levy is different than the other two questions that we ask the community. It's important for folks to know that as a school district, our finances are highly regulated. And unlike some other governmental jurisdictions, we don't just get to set the levy at whatever it is that we want. Almost all of our levy is all of our levy is either voter approved or state driven. There's very small amount that the school board has complete discretion over. And so you think about the three types of levies that we can ask the community for. The capital projects levy doesn't have that same energy that a bond referendum does because you're anticipating the potential building of a facility. It doesn't necessarily have the same excitement of what a operating levy brings to the community, but it is no less important. And as we've talked about before, we just remind people what we can use the money for. So we need it because, first of all, the why that we're asking for the renewal and expansion is our current capital projects levy passed in 2011, expires soon, so we're looking to renew that. The things that it can do is it can help us maintain and improve our buildings and grounds. I think everyone listening knows that we are good stewards, not only of our dollars, but of our facilities. We have taken care of our facilities. We haven't invested in them, in the things that are really important, you know, to make sure that the building envelope is secure so that we don't get water into the buildings. We try to take care of things that aren't maybe exciting to people, like tuck pointing and parking lots, but they're nevertheless important. We purchase equipment to maintain our parking lots in the winter. We do small on our own renovation projects like the science room at Bridgewater. We can purchase materials and equipment for students and staff. So thinking about big equipment that goes into the shop all the way to new textbooks for our science curriculum that's being updated to be aligned with the Minnesota state standards here in a couple of years, our technology leases, any kind of equipment or materials that we need for students and staff to support their learning. And then finally, we've shared with you, there's a narrow group of employees that we can pay their salary and benefits for. We are planning to do that and move those into the capital projects levy from the general fund so that just like you know in your business, you know, you have certain things of how you code your expenditures. This is no different than that. It's just more regulated by the state.
And once again, that those items will be on the ballot coming up 4 weeks from today, November the 8th. Anything more you'd like to say about that, Levy, before we move on?
Yeah, just a couple of items, Jeff. Number one is we've sent two mailers so far to people in the community to make sure that they know about the capital projects level. We've talked about it on this radio station. We've held two public meetings. I'm going to PTO meetings. I'm at 50 North tomorrow afternoon. If you want to come hear about it, you can check the 50 North website for details on that. One piece of feedback that I've heard from some people in the community is when they look at the ballot language that we send out, the ballot language looks like it's written by a lawyer because it is. It's a very prescriptive method in how we have to write the ballot language. We're not allowed to write it on our own. We actually contract with a lawyer to write it to make sure it aligns with the statute. And it's important for people to understand that we're required to ask the community to vote on a percentage. It also shows the total amount of money that would initially be raised. But what I want just to explain about that percentage is the percentage is the amount we will multiply the percentage by the value, what's called the net tax capacity of the entire school district. So they actually count up what every single taxable property in the school district is worth. That creates something called the net tax capacity. Then we multiply that percentage that the voters approve by that total net tax capacity to get how much money we will generate. That money that is generated then is divided out amongst all taxpayers, just like any other levy would be. So we're required to ask for it in the percentage base. I think the important piece is what do we get for those dollars? And then for a house that is valued at $350,000, the increase for them would be $81 this year. So think of it's like any other percentage, right? As the tax base grows, we would generate more revenue, but also it should have additional properties to be taxed across. So theoretically, as the tax base goes up, yes, the school district gets some more revenue, but that should also mitigate additional taxpayer impact. So it is a quirky way that we have to write it on the ballot. So I understand that. If people have questions about that, please call me. I can, for a lot of people, it's just a couple of individual questions that I can help them get to the point. Oh, that makes sense now. But if you ever understand percentages, it is simply we count up all the property in the school district. We multiply it by the percentages that are being proposed in the two questions. That's the money we generate. And then every taxpayer in the entire school district takes their share. And that's the way it works. I wish I could make it simpler than that. But I think what's important is for that $350,000 house, it's an $81 increase, $6.75 per month. And then the important part is seeing how it impacts our staff, our students, and our ability to take care of our facilities.
Superintendent Hillman is with us. If you'd like more information on that, or if you'd like to see the balloting, what it looks like on the ballot, go to our election guide, kymnradio.net. Go under the news headline. You'll see the election guide, and it's all spelled out there. Let's move on. You had some discussions about policy, implementing some policies, I guess, about policy, which is not redundant, really. It makes sense. But tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, we had a couple. So at almost every board meeting, we talk about policy. So I think it's important for the community to understand that school board governance is different than some other governmental jurisdictions. It is what is called a governance board. So the board governs. It doesn't manage. They hire myself and they hire our administrators to manage the district. But what they do is they set the direction and they also set policy. It's one of the most important things that they do. So at nearly every board meeting, we have some policy that we're reviewing because we have a number of policies. We're trying to review all of them on a every 5 years. We're trying to make sure we review every policy. But there's also times where we have policies that need to be updated because the legislature has made some kind of change in the law that impacts our policies. And so depending on the legislative session, that can kind of slow our policy work down. So we're working on a way to make sure that we can expedite to align our policies with the latest legislative updates while making sure that we can still review them, and then to ensure that we can keep looking at policies that maybe aren't impacted by the legislature. So, for example, last night, we did recommend that the board will vote on it the next time to sunset three policies that actually point to a law that doesn't exist anymore. And so when the world's best workforce law came into effect, that changed our school district, what they call system accountability, how we report results to the community. But we had three policies that pointed to the old law. And so that's the kind of policy work that we do. We're looking to update policies to modernize and make sure they're in step with how our community would like to govern our schools. It's to make sure that we're all in alignment with both state and federal law. And those policies are intended to provide guidance to school leaders and to all of our staff about how we conduct ourselves in certain circumstances. So policy work is not for the faint of heart, because you're doing a lot of hypothetical. You're trying to read, okay, if a person is in a situation where they need to read the policy because there's a concern about something, how can we make it as accessible and easy to read as possible while making sure you cover the potential outcome? So we have an active policy committee with three board members who review policies along with two students. We have two students on the policy committee representing the District Youth Council. They meet for a little bit more than an hour a month, and then we continue to bring forward policy to the board. Most of the time, the board has two policy readings, so they very rarely adopt the policy on the first time. They most of the time read it once and then adopt it on the second reading. We are going to expedite some of the modest changes to policies that are governed or that are prompted by the legislature. So I know that when you start talking policy, people are starting to look at the paint, or they're trying to look at, you know, well, maybe they're zoning out and thinking about maybe, well, the Twins do better next season than they did this year. But policy is really important.
All right. Lastly, let's talk about enrollment. Yeah. That was on the agenda last night as well. Tell us about it.
Yeah. So this is the first official enrollment report of the year. We did do a preliminary enrollment report a couple of weeks ago, but in Minnesota, the October 1st student count drives a number of different revenues that we receive. Now, there is a three-year window where the Department of Education looks back and makes sure that they gave us enough money, or did they give us too much money if we lost students during that time. And so we are continuing our declining enrollment. So as of October 3rd, what most people would think of as our traditional enrollment, students who are full-time in our K-12 classrooms, 3,754. Now, that is down from last year as we anticipated, but not quite as down as we had projected. So we're about 27 students more than what we had projected for our enrollment this year, but we're still down compared to what we had last year. So you will also just notice that our incoming kindergarten class is a fairly small kindergarten class. That's 238 students across those three buildings. And so we have one of our largest kindergarten classes that we can remember at Greenville Park. And we have one of the smallest kindergarten classes that we can recall at Bridgewater. So Bridgewater, which has been our largest elementary school for some time, Greenville Park was our smallest elementary school for some time. They have they're now the second of the three elementary schools, with Spring Creek having the fewest students right now. So the enrollment is really important for us. The bottom line is that we are experiencing the declining enrollment as we have anticipated. Because we are very thoughtful about how we project enrollment, we're a bit above where we had projected we would be. But we also do have a history of seeing some attrition during the school year. So that's where we're at today, Jeff. We are working very hard to do what I would call a soft landing on our enrollment, to be able to modulate our expenditures at a rate that they are commensurate, not one big swoop, right, but that we are able to moderate or reduce our expenditures over a period of time to get to that point where we have the new cruising altitude of what does our enrollment look like when it stabilizes.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's going to do it for our questions today. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Jeff, I just want to thank you and NorthfieldLive.com for your great work, really amplifying our students, both from giving them this broadcast and production experience that is so awesome. That's really great career technical ed. And just for being able to share both in audio and video the activities that our students are engaged in the community. We just value as a community partner.
And it's we value certainly the school district. The kids have turned out to be just wonderful at what they do. It's amazing the talent and the just everything about the kids that are working for us. Very impressive. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Superintendent Hillman, 95.1 FM and AM 1080 KYMN Northfield.